Welcome to a new episode of the Electric Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Fred Lambert, and I'm joined by Seth Winshaw, who's coming us live from Germany. How is it down there, Seth?
Good. I'm in Stuttgart, the headquarters of Daimler and Mercedes-Benz. And today, the Daimler crew was nice enough to bring me out to the Mercedes Museum. We checked out the Mercedes Museum, and we did a bunch of really cool test drives. The first thing we test drove was their semi. Again, you're going to have to help me with this. Actros?
No. Actros.
Actros. And I keep messing that up with that sharp Actros screen. Mm. They gave me a ride in that, and we retweeted them. They had a picture of me in there. But it was, you know, quite an experience. I'm not used to driving in a semi, which you're like two stories up in the air on the highway. And this one, because it's electric and quite powerful, doesn't behave like a semi. It behaves kind of like a car, an electric car. And getting on the highway, maneuvering is much quicker. You know, you get on the highway 0 to 60 in under 10 seconds, which compared to a typical semi is like five times fast, especially with a load. We didn't have a load today.
What do you know the capacity of the Actros?
I want to say 80,000. Is it 80,000?
80,000 is a class 8. I don't think it's.
Yeah, maybe it's something 8. Something smaller. This is a more like a local vehicle. I think the range is 120 miles or 200 kilometers. So it's kind of like a local thing. It doesn't have like a place to sleep for the driver either, because it's not type of vehicle. But it's already out. Like they're out on the streets right now making deliveries in Germany, Switzerland, and I think there's a couple in the U.S. Daimler has a couple of subsidiaries here in the U.S. Freightliner and a couple. I can't remember the other name, but it's an amazing vehicle. Like. You know, very simple. It's regenning all the time. And it's just like, it kind of made me sleepy. It was so smooth, accelerating and slowing down, that it was kind of tiring. So then after that ride, I got a ride, and I'm, I guess, the third journalist to ride in the EQV, which is their Mercedes van, which are quite popular. Here in Europe, it's a minivan size. It's not quite as big as a Sprinter, but you can seat 8 in it with 2 bench seats in the back, or you can have 4 captain's chairs in the back, or you can have no chairs in the back and the cargo hauling. Mercedes said they were getting a lot of fleet interest, you know, like airport transport vehicles.
So, probably just general cab too, like just would be great, yeah, for taxi. It would be great for like a Uber. What do you call it? Uber Plus, Uber,
yeah,
X Plus,
exactly. That's what they said. So and those things are also quite powerful, but not as powerful as you might imagine. The motor in there is a 150 kilowatt or 200 horsepower. The battery is 100 kilowatt hour, so like a P100D, but Daimler only uses 90% of it, or 90 kilowatt hours. You know, again, it's an electric vehicle, so all the things that you think you know about a van when electrified makes it quite a bit nicer. Acceleration was fast and smooth, and you know, one other nice thing is Daimler's bringing all of its EQ stuff to the van, as you might imagine, EQV, which includes their driver assist stuff, which is kind of pretty close to Tesla's, I would say. You know, we did the thing where you do the turn signal, and it goes into the other lane and steers, and so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I tried it on the EQC. And I have to say, like, for the lane keeping, they'll, like, stay in lane now. And say it's, like, 50% as reliable as Tesla. I'd say.
Yeah, I found we were in lane keeping. We were not like bouncing or dolphining or whatever it's called, but I found that we were like just kind of left, like bouncing like a slow pong ball up and down the lanes.
Yeah, you definitely don't trust it as much as the autopilot, though you shouldn't really trust autopilot either, of course, like you should.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they have the same steering wheel in the EQB as a Tesla, a Model S or X, because, you know, Tesla uses Daimler's steering wheel, and it's the same torque. So if you don't touch the wheel for like 10 seconds, you have to like torque it a little bit. So it is a little bit similar to Tesla's experience. But it was, you know, it's a great vehicle. I think we'll probably get a longer test the coming month. I think it's supposed to be kind of spring 2020 wider release, and you know, obviously Europe first with that. And then finally, after the EQB, I got to drive with my own two hands the EQC, and that's actually it was a much smoother vehicle than I had kind of anticipated. You know, obviously Mercedes is good at making things very quiet, very soft. Like the, you know, the ride was very soft. The acceleration and braking. I don't want to say the acceleration was soft because if you floor it, it moves. But it just wasn't as jerky all around as other electric vehicles I've tried. So. Great day today. We're going to have some videos and some stories up here in the coming days.
Great. We're going to take we have a few questions in the room, so we can take that real quick before moving on to the news of the week. Daniel needs, heard anything regarding the big production increase in Fremont that Jerome and Elon mentioned last quarter? I'm not sure if Elon mentioned it last quarter. I remember mostly we heard that from an email that was leaked from Jerome to the production team. So there's not much that we know about that. And even in that email, he was very like mysterious about it. Like he said, he couldn't tell the employees much about it. So no, we haven't heard anything new on that front. Last I've heard, they are still producing about. They are able to. They have stabilized Model 3 production at around 5,000 units per week, and Model S and Model S production is slowly getting back up since the changes that were done around adapting, starting to introduce Model Y production lines in Fremont, and also the update to the Raven. Those two things sort of happened at the same time, which reduced a lot of the production of Model X and X, so it's slowly getting back up. When is the Tesla pickup going to be revealed? Well, that's a good question, because he said summer 2019. He said this summer, and the summer is when does the summer end?
It's 21st of September, I believe.
21st September. So he still has about a month to do it. Though normally, and then the invites start coming out a few weeks ahead. So it might be pushed beyond the summer.
I also feel like recently he said something about we're trying to get the pickup launch, or it wasn't certain that the pickup announcement was going to happen soon.
Yeah, because when Tesla launches the car, and that's great for them. Like I have to say, like kudos to them for doing that, because not all automakers, especially not like the newer startup, do that. When they launch a new car, they do have prototypes ready. And they even give test rides. When they launch a product, they did that for the Model Y, they did it for the Roadster, they did it for the Model 3. You remember they were test ride in Model 3, right? Yes, they were.
Yep.
So that's good. So they do have a working prototype, even several working prototype in the case of the Model 3, in the case of the Model Y, ready at the launch of the car. And, that helps for credibility when they actually take reservation for it. Like they are asking money for customers, so it is appreciated that a working prototype is available there. But yeah, it looks like it might be a hold up on that front. Michael Lee asks, any update on FSD timing new computer install for those that paid? I wouldn't hold my breath on the computer upgrade thing. I mean, for people that bought FSDs, there's a few things that should come with FSDs. There was the computer upgrade, like Michael just mentioned, but then that there's no timing at all on that. So Tesla started doing the thing where, oh, we're going to give early access software to those with FSD. And that too is not, well, apparently they are rolling that. Like I heard of a few people. We do have it, but it's a small percentage of everyone that bought FSD. I bought FSD, it's still not on early access. And I know a few other people that are not too, even though they bought it. So I wouldn't hold my breath on that. But at the same time, you don't really need the computer until they have software that can take advantage of it. And we don't know of any features right now that would take advantage of the higher compute output that have been on the new FSD computers that already installed in all of Tesla's vehicles since April. Is that April or May? Around that time. So nothing on that front either. Tesla China, Maxim L, why does the Chinese authority give so much support to Tesla, specifically reduce sales tax for Tesla vehicle? Does China perhaps expect something in return? Well, they do get something in return. Tesla did invest or is going to invest over the next 2 years several billion dollars in Gigafactory 3, so they are definitely getting something in return. But I wouldn't say that it's kind of a special treatment that they're getting there. So you're referencing something that we're going to talk about later in the podcast, but a complete exemption on sales tax on vehicles. But what's special about that? I'm not exactly clear of how special it is. Other automakers that produce electric vehicles are getting the same treatment, but Tesla might be the first that get it for cars that are being imported in China. Not exactly sure. We're going to get into more of that. Callum Burnett says, Bloomberg stopped covering Fremont production. Do you have any insight into how many Model 3? Well, Bloomberg's never covered Fremont production. They had a tracker that was based on projection, based on VNs reported by owners. It was proven not reliable like a bunch of times. So, like, and they stopped doing it because it was completely unreliable. Even though they said it was by at the last minute refreshing the numbers when Tesla was actually releasing the production numbers. But that's another story. Like we said earlier, it looks like it's still stable at 5,000 units per week. Then Model S and X are slowly ramping up. I don't think they're nowhere near back to the 2,000 units per week, but by the end of the year, I wouldn't be surprised if they're there. Battery capacity of the Actros. They can get up to 240 kilowatt hour.
That's right, yep.
But I think they have different configurations too. Like you don't need to be 240.
Yeah, and they charge at 150 kilowatts right now, which is not amazing. They use the CCS combo too. But my understanding is that they're going to, like, this is kind of just the first generation. And as more fast CCS combo stations come out, they're going to bump it up to 250 and beyond.
Yeah. All right, now moving on to this week's news. The first one this week that we want to discuss is, of course, the launch of Tesla Insurance, Tesla's own insurance program. So it's something that we've been expecting for a while. It was supposed to launch in May. It's been delayed. It's also built on Tesla's previous program of Insure My Tesla, where they partnered with insurance company to tailor the program to Tesla customers.
Liberty but now, Mutual, yeah.
Yeah, now it's Tesla's very own program. You go through Tesla to handle things. And it's just in California for now. It's starting just in California. And it's available to everyone, though, like Model 3, Model S, Model X, and even Roadster owners, apparently. And they claim that it's up to 30% cheaper than competition, depending on the competition, of course. So some of them are actually less expensive. So you can get a quote in a minute online, and you can order it right away after that. You can, it's, they really streamline the whole process. Based on the feedback I have so far from people in California, Tesla owners in California who have tried it, it's a hit or miss. For some people, they do save a lot of money. For other people, they don't. And I have to assume that there's a lot of things that plays here, because people sometimes also bundle order insurance together. I know I have, I know I pay less for my car insurance because my house insurance is also on the same program and things like that. So if you do have something of the sort, removing the car and it might change the balance of it, really.
Yeah, a lot of people have two cars too, and what if you have one car that's not a Tesla?
Exactly, you, that's the big problem.
Yeah.
So our own Jamison Dow Electric tried it on his Model 3, and it was significantly cheaper, $152 per month versus $180 that he's paying with Allstate right now. And they do, if you're not getting this a better price, to make sure that all the option are the same, because you can change the deductible, you can change the amount covered, like the total coverage and things like that. So make sure that you have the same options, and then compare the prices. But they also take into account that if you're combining your insurance with others, and then even if it's cheaper, then if you remove your car from it, maybe your other insurance policies are going to be more expensive by removing the car. So take that into account. It's important. Also, what I'm hearing, that the biggest bad feedback that I'm hearing from this entire program is, unsurprisingly, the customer service. Tesla, like for the whole service, for its vehicle service things, they have been moving away from any type of phone support. They want everyone to go through the app and everything like that, and go through online. Sounds like they want to do the same thing with this insurance program here. For example, I had someone that they had the same problem that I just mentioned, where he got the quote. He was like, wow, it's less expensive than I do that. So he bought the quote right away. And then he got a call from his insurer that was like, yeah, maybe it is less expensive, but if you remove that, your other insurance, since you're not in a bundle anymore, they go up. And then he wasn't happy with that, because so he wanted to cancel the policy that he just bought. And he couldn't talk to, and he still can't talk to anyone at Tesla. Like the phone numbers that comes with your insurance policy, it gives you a robot that doesn't lead you to anyone. Like, depending on the option, I tried it too. I called the number, and there's no, like, none of the option leads to anything. It makes no sense at all. There was no clear email either for Tesla Insurance. The only people that you could reach was if you do as if you were making a claim, which the guy in question didn't want to make a claim, but that's the only one he could talk to. And those people apparently don't work for Tesla. It's a service that Tesla hired specifically for that. So they take all the information about the claim, and then they put that in the format that they can send to Tesla. But even then, they didn't have a direct contact to Tesla. They just had the email where they sent everything. So they did send a note about that, see if they can get an answer. So that's definitely not ideal. So, and I feel like customer service is a big part of the insurance industry.
Right.
Like, I don't know about you, but I had a few bad experiences with insurance, and the few good ones are like because you get a good insurance agent, really.
Right. So, do you imagine that filing a claim is going to be a nightmare or, you know, impossible once you get on the Tesla insurance, or is the claims department going to be fully staffed and people ready to handle the issues? Or are they going to outsource it to somebody else?
I'm not optimistic right now. Well, they do outsource, or they know about at least at the first line, like on the front line, where the directly when you call to make your claim, that's already a third party. But then it sounds like they send that information back to Tesla, and Tesla takes care of the claim from there. So I don't. It's a hit or miss. I've been a Tesla customer for years now, and customer service is a hit or miss. I've talked to a bunch of people that were great, that took care of me, and it was a perfect experience. Then I talked to other people that I was like, I couldn't believe that what they were talking to me, like what they were saying to me when I wanted service. Like it was more like, you're not buying anything, then get out of my face. Like, so hit or miss. I think it's going to be hit or miss there, but there are definitely ways to streamline insurance claims. So, and Tesla is big on making things efficient and everything. So I would assume that over time it would get better. It does make sense for me that Tesla is getting into the insurance business because of, especially for the future with the advent of self-driving. Yeah. And the current claims autopilot, where a bunch of other insurers don't believe in the advantages of autopilot, and Tesla certainly does believe, so they do reflect that in their pricing, which does make sense. So long term, I do believe that it's a great thing that Tesla just got into the insurance business. I just think that there's going to be a rough period of adaptation because it's a completely different business than selling cars, of course.
Yeah, and it's another revenue stream for Tesla.
Yeah, of course. On the business side, that's a great thing for sure. And Tesla did have a bigger week on the markets this week. A few good news have pushed it up, and I think the insurance program is also good news. That though the market has also been up to this week after a bad few weeks.
Yep.
And they've been bad mostly because of the trade war with China. So speaking of that, we're going to move to Tesla Gigafactory 3 in China. There's been some news this week. First of all, there's been a leak of images from inside the factory. So we've seen the outside pretty well by now. There's basically drones flying over it every day. And the outside hasn't changed a lot in the past few weeks. Tesla seems to have mostly completed the outside of the factory. But now it's the tough part of putting out the production line inside the factory and starting production within the next few weeks, really, next few months. They want to be at 3,000 units a week by the end of the year, and they want to start production early in Q4, which would be like early October. So that's like a month away. What we see from those pictures, it's not much, but they do have large portion of the production lines already installed. They do have dozens, if not hundreds, of robots. Install, but a robot install and a robot functional, it's not the same thing at all. Programming those things is very complicated, so keep that in mind. But most interestingly, we see a Model 3 body going down a production line. Production line seems mostly empty, so take that into account, but it looks like they're setting up the final assembly production line where they're going to put all the workstations around it, so it looks like they're doing dry runs of the body onward around the area where the final assembly line is going to be, so that they can plan the workstation accordingly. That's what it looks like, at least. But it is a good sign, I think, overall, that those pictures came out this week. They were encouraging. And at the same time, Elon visited the Shanghai this week, mostly for apparently for like a debate with Jack Ma from Alibaba. Jack Ma's from Alibaba, right?
Yep. What did you think of the debate? Or it wasn't really a debate. It was more like answering questions.
I watched the first 15 minutes and I couldn't. It was cringy as hell. They have this kind of like yin and yang going. Like one thinks it's good, the other thinks it's bad. It was about AI mostly, so it wasn't really relevant to or reporting about Tesla or even the Boring Company. Was supposed to launch the Boring Company China this week. We haven't seen much about that yet. Maybe that's still coming because I think it's still there, or maybe he left like very recently. No, I don't like it. I thought it was super cringy. Like, you. And if you heard Elon talking about AI before, it was still the same thing, like the worries, but the potential positive outlook while keeping it in check.
There was one thing that he said. This is kind of digressing, but he said that that he thinks that the population needs to grow a lot more, and that population decline was going to be the biggest problem of like the next 20 years. And I thought, you know, that's our biggest problem right now. There's too many of us. You know, Earth can't handle that many of us.
But there's a lot of that's a difference between different region of the world. Like there's some of region that you're right, like the population is growing too fast, too young. But there's other markets where the average age is growing much older and fewer. If you were children by couples, those mm-hmm. in those markets, and I think the U.S. is one of them, if I'm not mistaken, it's then yeah, he's right. That's going to be a problem, like a lower population problem. But it's more like a geographical problem than
right geopolitical almost.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but yeah. So as part of that presentation, there was a rumor that he was going to unveil the first China-made Model 3. And there was a Model 3 displayed at the show, because that was for the World Artificial Intelligence Conference. And there was a Tesla booth there with a Model 3. And there was talk about the Gigafactory 3 there and everything. But it was never clear that it was a car actually produced at Gigafactory 3. Some other outlets did report that, but I didn't see anything that would confirm that. And Tesla didn't make any announcement or anything, which I would assume they would make if they do produce the first Model 3 made in China. And if you look at the picture that came out just a day before that too, doesn't look like Tesla is ready to produce any kind of at least, I mean, you can always say that you made one, like you make a body or something and then you put the rest together by hand, but you can claim that it's a first made in China Model 3, but then you'd still be like weeks if not months away from production,
right?
With the real car that actually is worth making in the. Because, of course, they're not going to make them by hand. There would be no benefit to it, even with
lower cost of labor.
The lower cost of labor and the lack of import duties, if you can make it considered, have it considered made in China. So not ideal at all. But other good news that came out of China this week. All right, the tax exemption. So we touched a little bit on the subject earlier with the question, but it was announced today that Tesla's vehicles are officially now exempt of the sales tax for vehicles in China, which is 10%. So up to 99,000 yen, equivalent to about $14,000 off of the more expensive version of the Tesla's vehicles. And so. A lot of people, is it favoritism? Not really. There's a bunch of other electric vehicles that are also exempt, but I'm not sure if any of those cars are imported in the U.S. It looks like it's a bunch of cars from legacy automakers too, like for foreign automakers in China, but they do have a joint partnership in China, so the cars are made in China. So, and they added the Model S, X, and 3 on the list. Those currently are all being imported in China, and only the Model 3 and only the base variants of the Model 3 are supposed to be made in China. So I'm not sure what this is about exactly, but we're going to take it. I mean, it's going to be more cars, more electric cars in China. And but Tesla at the same time, yeah, go ahead.
Tesla recently raised their price.
Yeah, at the same time, they increase the prices, but the tax exempt negates the price increase. The price increase is just about 3%, and it seems to be mostly related to the exchange rate with the yen and the USD are fluctuating a lot nowadays with the trade war, so that's good news.
Yep.
Well, that's good news that the tax exemption arrive at the same time, so the customers are not paying too much for that that price change. All right, another news that got a lot of traction this week was this French company we reported on called Transition One, who claimed to have put together a streamlined EV conversion kit that they can do in a single day on a bunch of specific cars that they made specific cars, and they made the prototype. They use salvage Tesla battery modules. So. We've seen that a bunch of times before, people making EV conversion with Tesla battery modules, but they're mostly of like classic cars,
right.
Or some drag strip, like super fast cars, like the Tesla Honda is a good example that we've seen a few months ago. And they do that because it's extremely expensive. It's a labor extensive process to do it. It takes weeks normally to convert a car, or at least do it well. And you can make it good. You can make it like with a decent range. You can make it with a fast speed. Of course, like I said, some of them are drag strip monsters. But it takes time. It takes a lot of money. I've never heard of one for anything less than a few tens of thousands of dollars at least. Have you heard of anything like cheaper?
I mean, not a good conversion.
Yeah.
and this might be something like that, where it's kind of like when you get a new kidney, you leave the old kidney in there. This is I don't know if these guys are actually pulling out the internal combustion stuff, or if they're just adding electric on.
No, they are pulling some of stuff out. Let's talk about the specs real quick. So the price point is important. So we've been talking about normally it's too expensive. Here they claim to be making it for $9,000. That's the cost, but it's a French company. They aim at the French market first, and in France they do have incentive right now to recycle diesel and older diesel cars, gas powered cars. So with that, they claim that it brings the price down to $5,000, which is starting to get more interesting. But on the spec side, that's where things get a little bit more difficult to follow. So the vehicles they claim to be supporting right now, there's the Renault Twingo 2, Fiat 500, Citroën C1, Peugeot 107, Toyota Hego, and VW Polo. So, but the only prototype they unveil is of the Twingo. They say that that it goes 180 kilometers. That's 112 miles. However, on their website, so that's the prototype. On their website, they only talk about 100 kilometers in range, and also a top speed of 110 kilometers, which is not a lot. So, but again, 9,000 bucks or even 5,000 plus in France, though they're not still approved, because like you need to get approved on like to be road worthy, and they don't have that yet. And also, the we're basing those prices on some significant production of those EV conversion kits. They want to make 4,000 a year, which is a lot. But they are looking right now to raise 6 million to be able to make that production, have that production capacity.
Also, I wonder how scalable getting Tesla salvage batteries. Like, how many can you get? Like, they're not going to, if they actually are successful.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well,
if it's 100 kilometers of range on, so those cars are all like city cars. So you don't need a lot per car for sure. Like a few modules makes, can work. But yeah, you're right. 4,000 is not sustainable probably. So they're going to have to buy other things. And it complicates things if you have to make your own modules. Like, that's what's so easy with why so many conversion kits use Tesla salvage batteries, is because those modules like are already so well made and everything. So you just need to use them to incorporate the module and make your battery pack based on module instead of starting from scratch with battery cells. So yeah, I do love the concept. The concept makes a lot of sense to me. And of course, the argument is good. Like they say, the founder here, Henrik Libot, I'm selling to people who can't afford a brand new 20,000 euros electric car. We're turning the best-selling models across Europe into electric cars. So the idea is like most people cannot afford the starting price of an electric car, and they're starting from cars that are already really popular in Europe. However, that 20,000 euro electric car is a lot better than the electric the end result of their EV conversion. Like, so he's only betting on the fact that there's no car at that no electric car at that price point, so people will buy that. But I don't think many people would buy a 100 kilometer range EV, even though it would work for some people. Like, as a city car, it would work for a lot of people. But at that price, I mean, I think you can get for less than $9,000 now, you can get a Fiat 500e, right?
Yeah, I don't know how those sell in Europe.
Yeah,
But even an old Leaf or Renault Zoe, you can get for under 10 grand for sure.
Yeah. And that, I mean, you're getting, right now, if you do or still using salvage Tesla battery, you're getting used battery anyway. Your car is an old gassing car, so it's already used too. So you shouldn't have a problem buying a used electric car. And then, so I like the concept and everything, but I just don't think the price point and the specs are there. I had another idea, though, that I think would make sense. With all the decommissioned gasoline cars now, that like the giant recalls that VW had and a few other automakers are having too, there's like these incredible numbers of cars that are relatively recent and all the same models. So a conversion kit would be like, it would be simple to streamline it since you're already always making the same car. Converting those cars to EV could make sense. Because you could get them for cheap since they are all decommissioned. Then you could also streamline more the process because you don't have to go into a bunch of different models. I think it would be a good idea. And you could sell the whole car instead of just selling the conversion kit. So you already convert a car and then you sell it as a used electric car. I think that could be interesting. You could probably get, it would be a little bit more expensive, but not that more expensive. And you get a full car, not just having to use your existing car.
How do you feel about it being a battery electric car versus a hybrid? Like adding, you know, what I said before, adding the batteries instead of pulling out the internal combustion car.
That's not my expertise, but I'm not sure it would be easier. Would it? Making a plug-in hybrid?
It would be a tighter pack. Maybe you would lose a lot more room inside the trunk or inside the back seat or something. But
without talking about room, if you talk about the drivetrain itself, like a pure gasoline diesel car, the engine supply the power to the transmission directly. In a plug-in hybrid, the gas engine serves as a generator to the electric motor, which supplies the power to the transmission.
Right.
So, like, you're changing the whole thing around. Like, yeah, I don't know.
The gas on these particular cars powers the front wheels. So you would be putting the electric theoretically on the back wheels. I don't know. Like, there's probably a way to do it. It's probably more complicated. So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, and also, you know, like, I'm not a big fan of plug-in hybrids anyways.
Yeah, I know.
So I wouldn't I wouldn't buy that car. All right. Tesla Model 3 police car. I really like that. What I heard about Baggersville, Indiana. That's the police department in question. Over the last few years, we've heard about a bunch of new Tesla police vehicle. All around the world, I think there's over a dozen police departments all around the world who are using Tesla vehicles for a bunch of different reasons. But I've only heard about Tesla Model S and Model X vehicles being used. I think that might be the first Model 3. And the economics of it are pretty great, at least according to the Badgerville's police department. So they bought the Model 3, a standard range plus. The configuration that they had cost around $41,000. Then they converted, of course, to a petrol vehicle with the lights and the equipment inside and whatnot. They are doing it to replace a Dodge Charger. So normally they would buy a Dodge Charger at around $34,000. So it is $7,000 more expensive. Okay.
Do they get any kind of tax credit? Like a federal tax credit?
They probably do, right?
I don't know. Cops don't pay taxes.
Cops don't pay taxes?
No, they're part of the government.
Yeah, but they're part of you know more than that. Like, I'm not from the U.S., but the Badgerville Police Department is a municipal employee. They're with the town. They're not like it would make sense that maybe that the FBI wouldn't pay federal tax for low income tax. Do you even have federal income tax in the US, or is it just state income tax?
We definitely have federal income tax.
Federal income tax and state income tax.
I don't know. I don't think they do. I think that, like, government, I mean, churches don't even pay tax.
Yeah, that's a weird thing too, but
right. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, $7,000 difference at a purchase, but then they drive so much, the police patrol cars, they expect $6,000 of gas saving per year. So the difference is already paid in full in less than a year and a half. So that's awesome. And yeah. In terms of performance too, compared to the Dodge Charger, like, there's only advantages. The range, of course, is always the thing that people are afraid of. What about the range? What about the range? Standard range plus is 240 miles of range. They drive normally between 80 miles and 120 miles a day. So they find that is the longer they go is like 150 miles in a single day. So they're going to be perfectly fine with that. They're probably just going to install like a charging station at the police station. And things like acceleration, standard range plus is very competitive with the Dodge Charger. And it is, of course, a lot more quiet. And if you're quieter, that's not me saying it. That was actually the police department manager. Like, they said they can get the jump on people. Like the police officer literally said, if we are creeping down an alley or something, like, we are quieter. Like, okay. Not what kind of stuff happened in the alleys in Badgerville, Indiana, but I'm going to trust the police officer on that. So they were so amazed by the savings they get by going in with Model 3. They are planning to buy four more, and all the gas saving they're going to get for that, they plan to hire new officers. They said they need more officers there. So great news for that. I think a lot of other police department and just other municipal fleet and whatnot should all look into that. I mean, it makes so much sense. It was a little bit harder to justify with the Model S and X, even though they are a bigger vehicle. Like, Model S is probably more of a what most size police car size we're used to. Though I would like to know the comparison between the cargo space of a Charger and the Model 3. I bet the Model 3 beats it. So well made. Just Charger is not that big.
Yeah, that's true.
It looks big.
It is.
But the inside is not that big.
Right. And I wonder, like, trunk space and all that other stuff that you need.
Well, the trunk of the Model 3 is not that big, but I'm sure you can fit a shotgun and
tasers and stuff.
a vest. They have their bulletproof vest in there, too.
Putting perps in the back? Can you make a... an area for the
See that on the vehicle they showed. They had like their the separate screens with all the police system in there. They have all the lights and everything. I haven't seen the back of the car though. But I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the back seat of Model 3 is not that roomy, but
right.
I mean, you just commit the crime if you're in there. Well, innocent of the proven guilty, but you're suspected at least of a crime. So
right.
Being uncomfortable for a ride down to the station is the least of your problem.
Right.
So yeah, look into it, police people. My police officer podcast listener, suggest it to your captain, your police chief. You guys could be saving some money on the budget in the next, because they talk about keeping that for 6 years. They said that the overall savings after the cost difference should be $20,000 over 6 years. If you change your old fleet, if you have like a fleet of like a small town fleet of 10, 15 patrol vehicles, that's a lot of money to save.
Yep.
All right. We've done that. All right. Tesla software update coming up. Our friend at Electric, Very Green, Tesla, well-known Tesla hacker, if you will.
Green the only?
Green the only, Very Green. Green, he has a bunch of different names. None of them of his real name, of course, because he don't want to be blacklisted by Tesla. He's revealed a lot of information about the company because he has root access to in his car. When he get the new software update, he's able to dive deep in it and learn more information about it. And on the latest update, 2019-32, he found a few things. He said that they found a list of like a high priority features, so things that Tesla is working on right now to release soon. Interesting list. Some things that we already knew about, like Feeling Lucky navigation system. We've talked about a few months ago when Elon talked about it. Something like you can press a Feeling Lucky button on your navigation system and Tesla's going to suggest you a location. I think a location, and it could be based on the location being popular with other Tesla owners. So Tesla can detect that, a lot of owners are going there. Probably a good thing to go there. Same thing with feeling hungry, and they would suggest a restaurant that has been popular with Tesla owner. We're going to see that. But that's not the most interesting thing. More interestingly, smart AC charging. So he doesn't have any details about that. It just has the mention of it in the software. But I mean, we can speculate what it could be, and I think it's something that a lot of owners have been waiting for a while, which is a deeper customization of the charging schedule and the Tesla vehicle. Like, you could tell it to charge at a specific time, and maybe even tell the system a departure time, and the car will charge to the state of charge that you want by the time that you want to leave. Things like that. What else? Yeah, any ideas, Ed?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things, like you know how like a Nest thermostat can turn off your air conditioning when there's like a brownout happening. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, Tesla could work with the power company to pay for your charge. Also, you know, I don't know if this matters to anybody, but you know, if you have like 12 hours to charge and you really only need 6 hours of charge, it could charge lower. So, you know, it's not as big a draw on the grid at one time. I don't know if that matters to anybody, but there are a lot of little things that, like that happen.
Yeah. Well, the idea, like, with the smart AC charging, smart level 2 charging, or level 1, really, there's a lot of things that can fit into that for sure, but interesting note. And the other thing that he mentioned is downloadable game pack, which of course is related to Tesla's increasing implementation of more video games inside the vehicles. A few months ago, Tesla launched Tesla Arcade, which is like the Tesla app for the games, and they've been releasing a bunch of games under that. But Elon did mention that there's a memory limitation on the media computer on the car. So they cannot put that many games on it. And one of the solutions that's been talked about is the game would be in the cloud, and you would have to download them when you want to play them. And then you can switch between game that you keep on your memory, in-car memory, on your in-car computer. So downloadable game packs would probably be that. You download that game, and then when you're done, you download another one. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward.
I wonder if that's going to be over the AT&T network in the U.S. or if it's going to have to be Wi-Fi. Those are pretty big.
Yeah, he did mention that too. You're right. That's a good point. He did mention like things like the upcoming video streaming capacity that's supposed to be in version 10. He said that would be Wi-Fi only.
Right.
I would assume that video games also would be Wi-Fi only. And he didn't say when those features are coming, but we assume it's most likely going to be with version 10. Which right now looks like end of September, early October.
At best.
Yeah. All right. Earlier this week, you got a chance to check out the new Renault Zoe.
Yeah. So for those in the U.S. who don't know, the Zoe is probably, I don't want to say the most important, but it's the kind of like the best-selling, before the Model 3 came along, was the best-selling electric vehicle in Europe.
It's still probably the most currently on the roads. Like, there's more Renault Zoe than any other electric cars on the roads.
I mean, there's more Nissan Leafs globally, but in Europe specifically, where the Zoe is, and the Zoe sells well in Europe because it's a very small car. It's called a Type B, which like a third of the cars in Europe are Type B cars.
Also, so they had the battery pack scheme thing that made it very popular in France too.
Right, you could.
I think that helped pack. A lot. The starting price was like 20,000 euros or something with the battery pack scheme.
Yeah, it's super cheap as EVs go. It's also very small, but it's we drove one at the FIA thing last year. I don't know if you remember.
I remember, and I felt very similar, at least inside of a Nissan Leaf.
Right, it's the same kind of acceleration and experience, just generally speaking. Which it's not like a Tesla for sure, but it's nice. It's a car.
I prefer the interior, and the exterior of the Zoe to the Leaf.
I agree. And so the new one
looks good.
Interior looks way better. It looks way better than a Leaf, but it looks just generally speaking, it looks better than its predecessor. It's got a bigger diamond in the front because it's now a CCS combo charger versus before it was just a AC charger. They now charge on DC, which it's only at 50 kilowatts, which I'm not a fan of that. I think they should have jumped to 100 at least. But you can charge with the DC fast chargers, which are all over Europe. Europe's really doing a good job of getting charge stations out there. Other changes are it's got a bigger screen, like a 10-inch screen inside, which, for a $20,000 car to have a really nice infotainment system is kind of nice. The big change, obviously, though, is the battery pack, which is the same size, but and they use LG exclusively. LG managed to get about 20% more energy capacity, kilowatt hours in there. So it went from 40 to 52 kilowatt hours, which is a big change, and it also gives them more power to put to the motor, which is now 100 kilowatts, so 140 horsepower, which in a car that size is plenty to get it going. Now we can't talk about driving. Micah's going to be driving it in about 10 days in Sardinia. But, needless to say, it's going to be much better than its predecessor, which, wasn't bad. It was just, a little underwhelming performance-wise. It's just, it's a good experience, just not, exciting. And, because it's such a small car, it performs well in Europe where, there's a lot of narrow streets, there's a lot of tight parking, parking spots are smaller, et cetera, et cetera. So, this is going to be a great car for the European market.
How do you think it would perform in the US?
I mean, it's kind of like a Chevy Bolt. It's not the same performance kind of thing as a Bolt, and the Bolt just went from 60 to 60.
It would be similar. What's the range? I think it's more efficient, right?
For 52 kilowatt hours. See, the problem is they use the European. Yeah. So it's hard to do apples to apples. I guess you could compare it to the Ampera E. But I think inside it's not quite as big as the Bolt. I think the Bolt passenger compartment goes forward a little bit, so the back is a little bit tighter.
But the interior is so much more beautiful than the Bolt.
Yeah. So the Bolt interior is very polarizing and kind of looks like a toy. And this is, looks like a more mature car. So, to me, this says Chevy really, or GM really dropped the ball and not bringing more Bolts to Europe. Because, it's a better car in a lot of ways than this thing is. And, the updated one. And, it was out 4 years ago. The other thing interesting about Zoes is they're a super small car, but they have 22 kilowatt AC charging. Which is like the same as the Model X and S when they had the dual chargers. It's before DC came out, it was kind of the only way to charge this thing up fast.
Yeah, it was useful, but at the same time, nowadays it's just not that many 80 amps level two stations out there. You don't find much of them. Maybe in Europe, unless I'm mistaken, and there's more of them in Europe, but
no, there's definitely more DC fast chargers. It was kind of like a jerry rig thing because you would actually have to hook that up to like a three phase T40, which like it was kind of like something that welding station used. So yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah,
but it's going to be a great car. I think it's going to be very popular in Europe, and I think bike is going to have a great time reviewing.
Do you know the price? What does the price look like?
So they're because of all the incentives, like every single market, Germany, Norway is the biggest market. I think France is two and Germany is three. There's different incentives in each one. So it was like a different price one. But I do remember that they are trying to keep it at the exact same price point, which that's kind of impressive for such a big upgrade. So it's going to be around 20,000 euros.
It's a lot cheaper. If that's it, it's base price of the Zoe, 29,000 euros.
Yeah, but then you get a bunch of...
Rule 50, 36,000 euros for the... 50. Yeah, that's pretty expensive. But that includes the VAT, of course.
Right.
But it would be like a little bit less expensive, I think, in the U.S., like before taxes.
Yeah, I mean, Renault hasn't been in the U.S. since they sold AMC to Chrysler in like the late 80s. But they could bring it over as another brand, maybe, you know, with an alliance partner or something. I think Renault and Mitsubishi were trading like nameplates, so they could come over as a Mitsubishi or as a Nissan, I guess. But
although Mitsubishi is now, no, it's still in the alliance, right? Yeah, it's the alliance, right?
Yeah.
All right, speaking of another car that's only available in Europe, the new Audi e-tron 50. So they did a new slightly changed powertrain of the e-tron that we know, which has a 95 kilowatt hour battery pack. This new one has, is it 50? No, 71 kilowatt hour battery pack. So a bit smaller, shorter range. Talking about 186 mile range, but that's again, that's WLTP. So you can expect closer to 150, I would assume. We talked about it a few weeks ago, but they announced it only for the European market. And the goal was clearly to have like a lower entry point for the e-tron. Specifically, the only price point that they mentioned, it was under 70,000 euros for the German market, because that's the price point they need to achieve to get the tax incentive. I think it's a direct rebate. It's like a 4,000 euro direct rebate, I think they have in Germany. So that's what they were trying to do. This week, they confirmed the price for Norway, which is, of course, the biggest market for electric vehicle. And it's going to start in Norway at 499,000 Norwegian crown, which is about $55,000. So a lot lower than we expected. If we compare like $55,000, the 96 kilowatt hour version start at $75,000. So it's this big difference, $20,000 difference. Some people should be perfectly fine with the range difference, though it was already the biggest complaint about the normal, the standard e-tron 55, which get about a real range of around 200 miles.
You know what's interesting? The lower model Audi e-tron 50 has a 71 kilowatt hour battery pack. That's only 4 kilowatt hours smaller than the big Tesla Model 3 pack, which goes 325 miles or whatever. That
they really didn't focus on efficiency.
No, like
that's the clear thing.
I mean, I don't know if they can do any. You know, the Tesla ekes out a few more miles. I wonder if Audi could do some updates to its software.
Yeah, they certainly could, because there's different things that happen. Like the aerodynamics are not as the. They did some compromise there to keep it looking like just a regular SUV, which to some degree is a good tactic. Like it's not as radical of a change for people, right, that are going electric. If you are already a fan of Audi's SUVs, you're gonna like the design of the Audi e-tron. There's also the weight. There's also like the interior is certainly more on par for a luxurious SUV interior, which is gonna be heavier. But the biggest impact on range for the SUV for the e-tron is the buffer that they keep for on the battery pack. They keep a big buffer at the top, big buffer at the bottom for battery longevity. It also helps, of course, to maintain like charging speed. And yeah, but it's mainly for battery longevity. So on the, I think it's 83 kilowatt hour of usable capacity on the 95 kilowatt hour back for the standard e-tron. So I don't know what it's going to be on the 71 kilowatt hour, but I would assume it would be closer to 60 kilowatt hour. So that's the big difference. I think the Model 3 75 kilowatt hour used like a 3 kilowatt hour buffer or something like that. So big difference between 3 and 10 or some or whatever they're going to use. And then, of course, it's a much bigger car. Well, at least in size, exterior size than the Model 3. But I think... actually, I don't know. I'll be curious to see the numbers in the next few months whenever they start deliveries of this, how it impacts overall e-tron sales. I hope that they're going to release the mix of e-tron 50 and e-tron 55. That'd be interesting. Like, see what people are going for. Are they going for the cheaper model? Or are they going for the model that at least get 200 miles of range?
I think they're going to get way more sales on the higher end model.
Yeah. Mm. We'll see. 20,000 different in price. It's a big difference too. So
yeah,
maybe people will start like making calculation. Do I really need the 50 miles more range? We'll see. All right. Faraday Future. We haven't talked about them for a while now, but there's big changes that are happening this week. And there was a report coming out of China that Jia Yuting, the longtime founder and CEO of the company, is finally stepping down. And they are talking about a restructuring of the company and a partnership probably with another company. So that was a report that came out of a Pandili in China. And then a day later, Faraday Future ended up releasing a press release where they were extremely vague about the situation with the GT. They didn't deny that he was stepping down, so I assume that it's right. He talked about him restructuring his debt. Of course, GT is mostly known in China for being the co-founder of Lyko, which is like the Netflix of China. Mm-hmm. And the stock completely plummeted a few years ago, and he ended up in giant debt. He was like one of the biggest billionaire in the country, and he rapidly lost a lot of money, and then he couldn't get back in China because a lot of his creditors were looking for him. So he went to the US and started running Faraday Future instead. So a lot of controversy there. But from having spoken to a bunch of different high-level Faraday Future employees, not mostly ex-employees, who worked directly with GT, they almost all agree that GT was the main problem with Faraday Future. There was a ton of money poured into Faraday Future over the years, so they should have brought something to market by now. They could have, like, we talk about Lucid Motors trying to raise a billion. They had their billion at Faraday Future. They should have been able to bring something to market. They haven't. And a lot of it, most people agree that a lot of it came back to JT's decision. Also, he lost the big $2 billion investment that they had from Evergrande. More recently, dude, they did get a bridge loan of $225 million, which is not... Like it's not peanuts. Like that's a lot of money, but it wasn't clear where that bridge was leading to. I mean, there's so many employees left over the last year that there wasn't a lot of optimism there. But in that press release this week, they did mention that they're gonna have a big announcement on September 3rd. I think that's next week. I would assume that following that report from Pandili, it's going to be that partnership or something, and that would make sense. So maybe it's going to be family something out of Faraday Future. But I mean, I used to be excited by the FF91 and what they did with that car. There was a lot of cool things about the car, but there was a lot of cool things about that car back in 2016. 2019 now, and if it comes to market, like, if, let's say that everything goes perfectly from here, not going to come out until 2020 next year. Is it as cool as it was in 2016 with all the market evolved since? I doubt it. Also, they were talking about an insane prices for it, like $200,000-$300,000, which makes no sense for that car. Like, they wanted to do, I think what GT wanted to do was like having like that type of a Rolls Royce. How do you say that? The British automaker, Rolls Royce.
Rolls Royce, yeah.
Rolls Royce. That's a weird. It's a weird word to say for a French speaker. Mm-hmm. They wanted to do something like that, but Rolls Royce has a brand awareness that allows them to charge that kind of prices. Don't know that many people that would buy like a similar version of the car just because it's electric and it's made by an unknown Chinese, half American company. But again, they did still make a lot of cool technology there. They did have for a long time some like old school EV people, very passionate about EVs, that did develop some nice technology. So maybe there's gonna still something cool coming out of it. So we're gonna keep an eye on Faraday Future, at least for the next few weeks. Then we're gonna reevaluate. Maybe we're gonna need to stop reporting on them because it's been leading to nowhere for a while now. Starting to get tired of it. But for now, they stay on the list of the companies that we cover. Electric. All right, that's pretty much it for us this week. Thanks a lot, everyone, for listening and watching on YouTube. We're gonna catch you same time, same place next week. Ciao.